This is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, we're keeping an eye on the weather. There is a tornado watch in our area and a flash flood watch. We'll get the details. Dan Hoost is here with his regular Friday update, which will include more on the watch, the threat that closed the county government offices on Monday, and the temporary closure of Lake Superior Beach. Plus, the Radio Catskill Community Advisory Board invites you to Horizon Happy Hour. We'll talk to Dr. Neil Hitch, who is president of our Community Advisory Board, about the feedback you can offer coming up next week. And Valerie Manzi with two culture reports today, the Round the Bend Theater and Song Club. It's all coming up. First, the news from NPR.
This is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Former President Donald Trump says he wants to debate Vice President Harris several times next month. NPR's Danielle Kurtz-Leben says that includes a previously scheduled debate on September 10th on ABC.
Trump is now open to doing three debates with Kamala Harris. Now, that comes after weeks of waffling about whether he would debate her at all. Now, he named three dates in September on which he would debate and three networks, ABC News, NBC News, and Fox News. Shortly after he said this, Harris said she would do the September 10th debate on ABC. Now, Trump had backed out of that previously. And she also told reporters she's open to other debates, but she didn't commit to anything.
NPR's Danielle Kurtz-Leben reporting. Meanwhile, Harris and her running mate Tim Walz will campaign later today in the Phoenix area. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports this is part of their multi-state tour.
The candidates have been working all week to shore up support among younger, diverse, and labor-friendly voters who were key to President Biden's victory in 2020. Amani Cheers, a professor of public affairs at George Washington University, says the Democratic strategy moving ahead needs to be unifying.
Instead of doom and gloom and fear, run on, get back to the idea, and President Obama did this really masterfully in 2008, is he ran on hope.
Today's stop will be the first time that voters in Arizona will get to know Harris's running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, in person. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
President Biden and leaders of Egypt and Qatar are calling on Israel and Hamas to resume emergency talks next week. These are to focus on the war in Gaza and on the release of hostages. The leaders want a meeting next Thursday in Qatar or Egypt. Israel says it will send a team. Hamas has not yet responded. Stocks opened lower this morning after a big rally yesterday. As NPR's Scott Horsley reports, the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 55 points in early trading.
The S&P 500 index enjoyed its best day in nearly 2 years on Thursday. Stocks regained much of the ground they lost earlier in the week. Asian markets were also mostly higher overnight, up in Tokyo, Hong Kong, and Seoul, but down in Shanghai. China reported slightly higher inflation for July than had been expected. We'll get an update on July inflation in the U.S. next week. Consumer prices are also climbing faster in Germany and Mexico. That didn't stop Mexico's central bank from cutting its benchmark interest rate. Mortgage rates in the U.S. have dropped to their lowest level in 15 months. Freddie Mac says the average rate on a 30-year home loan is now just under 6.5%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are now down about 25 points at 39,421. The Nasdaq is down nearly 40 points. This is NPR. The remnants of Tropical Storm Debby are speeding north. The heaviest rain is falling in Pennsylvania and New York this morning. More heavy rain stretches up into Maine and Canada. Flooding is still the most serious threat. Tornado watches are up from Maryland to southern New York. Officials in North Carolina say a person died there yesterday because of the storm, bringing the U.S. death toll to 8. For the second year in a row, there's been catastrophic flooding in Alaska's capital, Juneau. It comes from the nearby Mendenhall Glacier. This week, glacial water flowed into some of the city's most populated neighborhoods. From member station KTOO, Anna Kenny has more.
The rapid retreat of the glacier, fueled by human-caused climate change, created a glacial lake that now releases water into the Mendenhall River each year. Almost exactly 1 year ago, it suddenly released billions of gallons of water, and the unprecedented flooding swept away two houses. This year, the flood was even higher, and the damage more widespread. Juneau Mayor Beth Weldon estimates at least 100 houses took on water.
We're already talking about what can we do to prevent this, because it was a foot higher than last year's, ironically on the same date, and we can't have this an annual thing.
Glacier scientists say as long as the glacial lake exists, the risk of damaging floods will be there. For NPR News, I'm Anna Canny in Juneau.
Northeastern Ohio is still trying to repair storm damage from severe weather and tornadoes earlier this week. Tracking sites say nearly 200,000 Ohio customers remain out of power now for the third day. Most are clustered near Cleveland. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Insperity, providing HR services and technology, from payroll, benefits, and HR compliance to talent development. Learn more at Insperity.com/HR Matters. And the Doris Duke Foundation.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government. We'll get to him in just a moment. But first, important updates on the weather. The National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch for Orange, Sullivan, Pike, and Wayne counties in our listening area until 2. And there's a flash flood watch as well for the region till 2 a.m. overnight. Remnants of Tropical System Debbie are over our region today. And the number one concern, according to the National Weather Service, is flash flooding. There is a moderate risk for flash flooding from later this morning until early evening. The center of Debbie's remnant low is located over central Virginia this morning, and that cold front's interacting with Debbie heading towards southern Ontario, causing this heavy rainfall and potential for flash flooding. Again, creeks and small streams are the highest risk for poor drainage in urban areas, at most risk of flooding during this rainfall period. And mainstem river flooding potential is somewhat less, but still exists late Friday, lingering into the weekend. Again, flooding is the number one concern of this system moving forward. Dan Hoost is the communications director for Sullivan County. He joins us every Friday. And update from the county level in terms of the watches that we're undergoing right now?
We're monitoring the weather very closely, thankfully saying that we are sort of on the eastern extreme of any of this tornado potential. Of course, we'll reiterate, a tornado watch is not a tornado warning. People confuse that very easily. A watch just simply means, just like a flood watch, that there's a potential for it, a heightened potential for it. A warning would mean that one has been detected or is suspected, just like a flood warning means flooding is imminent. So if you see or hear that something changes from a watch to a warning, that's when you do need to take action. Right now, you just need to be prepared. We have experienced many tornadoes over our history. Even before we started talking about climate change, I remember when I was a teenager and somebody in the beech woods there, they almost died when the tornado veered at the last minute from hitting their house and hit their garage, but it completely destroyed their garage. And of course, last year we had that one up in Roscoe. So there is a potential for it. We need to stay alert. If you have a cell phone, make sure that that is on because the alerts will come through that. Obviously, listen to JFF and other local radio stations. And, of course, our 911 Facebook page will have any updates as we get them. But at this point, I'm cautiously optimistic that the worst we'll see is a little bit of wind and rain.
Right. And again, the National Weather Service indicates that flash flooding is by far the greatest risk for this system, but a few stronger storm cells with gusty winds and isolated tornadoes cannot be ruled out. So keep an eye on the weather and listen to us and be weather aware, as they say. We are looking to Mr. Dan Hoost to tell us a little bit more about what's going on in Sullivan County government. Before we get to legislature news from yesterday, there was some news earlier this week. The legislature county government buildings shut down because of an emailed threat. Can you give us an update on what happened and any other news and update from that incident?
Yeah, we had received at the beginning of the week an email to our general email box. It's just what you can find on our website. And somebody put in something about needing to get out of the offices because they had bombs in every office. And then there was also talk of a mass shooting. And the way it was presented, it wasn't terribly specific. It was something where right off the bat, we were like, this may not be genuine, but you can't treat these things as, that's not going to happen. Because obviously if it does, some heads are going to roll on that one. So we took precautions on that and decided to empty out the government center building. And then once our investigators took a look at the email, they were like, well, this wasn't even building specific, so you may want to actually empty out your other public-facing buildings. So we did that for our social services campus and our Center for Workforce Development in Monticello. Thankfully, once they had some bomb-sniffing dogs come through, there was nothing found. There were no threats. This happened to at least two other places within the Hudson and Delaware Valley region on the same day.
Other government offices? Or?
No, actually, one was an educational facility and one was a mixed office suite that had some government offices.
From the same source or different?
I haven't confirmed that, so I can't say that for certain, but I think that's what is being suspected. Investigation is still ongoing. Last I heard was that it appeared that it may have originated from outside the country. So it may have been somebody, for lack of a better term, testing the waters on things and just seeing how much disruption they could cause, which obviously they did. Hopefully our investigators will track down who this person or people were and that we can actually they can face some consequences, because we don't want to encourage this kind of behavior to continue happening. Because even though there in the end was no true threat, it still scared people. It inconvenienced the public who was trying to utilize our services, because we shut down for the whole day. And then, of course, we all had to catch up on Tuesday. And especially with offices that had appointments that they had to reschedule for Monday, it was a real task. So, but at least I am thankful to say that no one was hurt. It turned out to be unfounded.
Happy with the response of everybody in this situation?
Oh, yeah. Our sheriff's office, the state police, they were instantly there. They very quickly brought the canine teams they needed to investigate. It was just very well handled by everybody involved. And also, I should give kudos to our staff, because they left the building. No running, screaming, flying hands kind of thing. They were very calm about it. It worked. It showed us that this kind of the response to this kind of situation is where it should be. Not that we're going to be any less vigilant, but it worked out as well as I think it could have.
I want to talk about a couple of closures. One planned, one not so planned. Lake Superior Beach temporarily closed because of a very large algae bloom.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I actually was looking through my press releases from years back, and it was almost exactly at this time 2 years ago that we had to do the same thing with the Lake Superior Beach. It's this blue-green algae that is a mild irritant to the skin, but can be more toxic if you accidentally ingest it while you're swimming in it. I don't know anyone who really likes to swim within algae, but the potential is there within our swimming area at Lake Superior. So in concert with the Department of Health, we said, all right, we need to shut this down. We are now monitoring it. I have a feeling with this cooler, rainier weather that we might be reopening fairly soon here, because the algae, what it likes is hot weather with not a lot of rain. And that's what we had leading up in the days leading up to this. And so it's the cyanobacteria, and we just need to let it naturally disperse. And once it does, we'll test. And once a test comes back clear, we'll wait a whole 24 hours, and then we'll let people back onto the beach. That said, though, everything else at Lake Superior is still open. You just can't rent boats or swim. However, if you have your own boat and you want to put it in and go fishing, you can. We already have marked off where the bacteria is so that you're not transporting it around. But we have picnicking facilities. We've got just a great place to hike and enjoy time with the family. So it's still open.
And the one planned closure is traffic-related Welsh Road Bridge closing temporarily in Canosa Lake.
Yeah, it's going to be closed for 5 weeks starting next week. It's a very easy detour. In fact, most people probably don't use Welsh Road unless you live on it or you just use it as a shortcut, because it's a very short road, I think less than a mile. It's right near where 52A meets 52 near the Stone Arch Bridge in Canoosa Lake. The 52 bridge that's right next to the bridge, the Stone Arch Bridge, that stays open. This is a little one lane bridge just down accessed off 52A that connects the one end of Welsh Road to 52 on the other end. So it's a bridge that will need some work, but is not a critical bridge. We just want people to be aware it'll be closed.
We're talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, as we do every Friday. We have a report from legislature's meeting yesterday. One thing that kind of stuck out to me was that they reported that fentanyl has been found in every overdose death this year. That was the coroner reporting that information.
Coroner Albie Bachman, he was saying, and that struck me as well. That really caught my attention. As he was saying, you know, every death that we've responded to when we've done the toxicology on an overdose, we found there was fentanyl in there. And he said something that is just basically the size of a grain of salt, fentanyl that is the size of a grain of salt can be lethal. And he said a lot of people aren't intending to take fentanyl. They're taking something else, but has fentanyl in it. Because that's what the dealers and distributors are putting in there. It makes it far more potent and far more addictive, but it also makes it far more lethal. So we just wanted to put out there that warning that if you are taking drugs or know somebody who is, it's more dangerous than it has ever been before. And we have ways of getting yourself off of that. But if you are still taking, you need to make sure that family, friends, and your healthcare professional are aware of what you're doing, because you're playing with your life.
Did he report on the number of overdose deaths so far this year, and how is that compared to previous?
The overall overdose deaths are down from what they've been in the he did not give specific numbers to date at this point. Last I knew, there were about 2 to 3 every month overdose deaths, but we had been getting up as high as 4 to 6 in years past per month. I think there is a bit of a message that is getting out there, but this is also something, addiction is not something that somebody chooses to just, you know, I'll become addicted and then suddenly I'll become unaddicted. It is pernicious. It grabs you, it holds you, and then it tries to drown you.
And the Drug Enforcement Task Force is trying to help with that by distributing Narcan kits. Is there any update on how that project is going?
Yeah, we've been distributing them all over the place, but one of the more successful spots has been, and I'm happy to say this because we put out a promotional video about this a few weeks ago, we have had more than 100 Narcan kits dispensed via our vending machines since January. We have them at Public Health and Liberty and also near our probation department in the Government Center Annex in Monticello. And I've been walking past there and been happy to see that there are empty rows. We will refill them, but that's what it's there for. It's free. You just have to enter a code. The instructions are right on the vending machine. We don't ask for any identifying information. We aren't recording you while you're standing there and taking it. We just want to make sure we know how many have been dispensed at any given particular time. These vending machines are very easy to use, and what you get is a kit with 2 doses of Narcan, which is the overdose reviving drug, I guess, is what to say, medication, plus some test kits for fentanyl and xylazine, latex gloves, and some information on where to find help, either medical emergency help or long-term addiction support.
Another topic that came up yesterday in the legislature, telework, remote working, working from home. What was the discussion there about?
Well, it's been brought up before where, you know, how do we have employees who are working from home and should they be working from home? This all really rose out of the COVID pandemic when much of the staff were working from home. In fact, I think the state still has a lot of people who work from home 3 to 4 days a week. With Sullivan County, however, we created a telework policy, and we, what was described there, and I wanted to explain it to people, especially since there was some social media momentum on this, was that we only have about 100 out of our 1,000 employees who are working from home. It's very carefully vetted. We make sure that they understand and we understand the nature of their telework. No one works more than 2 days a week from home. if they do work from home, and it's worked out in a fashion where we know that they can work from home very effectively. For example, we have somebody who is doing a lot of reports and just needs to be on the phone and on the computer. That can be done from home. They don't need to interact with anyone directly. But the vast majority of our employees either need to interact with people directly as part of their work and or want to, like me. I love being in the office and being part of a team. But we are very studious, I would say, about making sure taxpayers' money is appropriately spent and public service employees are rendering public service. But those people who can work from home, it's an incentive for them. It's a good thing for them. But legislators started debating that back and forth, and that's why I wanted to bring that up.
So was the discussion about that working from home is somehow less effective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an inference being made that it just allows people to goof off. Our folks working from home are not goofing.
Were there any reports or problems of that, or just
no? It's personal opinions.
I see.
But like I said, it gained some traction on social media, and I wanted to bring it up here just to let people know. We keep very close track of folks who are working from home. And if it works for them and it works for us, then it works for the taxpayer as well.
Speaking of taxes, bed tax monies are going to be used to fund some discretionary grants later this year if it's approved by the full legislature. Is that the latest? I think we spoke about this last week, about this
it's
surplus.
It's related. It's not exactly the same thing. It's part of that money. It's not the whole money. It's just $300,000, which would fund the discretionary grant program rather than funding it out of the general fund. Mm-hmm. So it would come out of the bed tax that visitors pay rather than taxpayers, that property taxpayers.
And what are some
pay.
Of these discretionary funds?
Well, this is what goes out to, for example, different emergency response agencies who need to purchase something but don't have the funding or don't want to go to their taxpayers to ask for it. It might be particular programs in a legislator's district that they wanted to see get funded. It could be, for example, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance gets funding to redistribute. It's about, I think, $40,000 to redistribute via grants to other arts and cultural organizations. The word discretionary meaning that it is in the discretion of the legislature as to who they give it to and what they use it for. And this is just changing where that stream comes from. It doesn't seem at this point to be too controversial. It's the larger issue, which we talked about last week, I think it was.
Right, with the surplus.
Visitors Association. That was talked about a little bit, mm-hmm. saying legislators were like, we don't want to disparage or discredit the Visitors Association. We appreciate everything they do. But there are certain funds that they think they want to have more of a say in how they're used. And they may still very well be funneled through the Visitors Association.
Any timeline on when that gets decided yet?
I have a feeling in the next month or two.
And then what about the move of this $300,000 to discretionary grants in the budget line?
That's basically just a paperwork thing. That'll be decided next week. Soon. Yeah.
All right. And then Human Rights Commission, you are still looking to fill that role. What's the update there?
Yeah. I think the clearest indication I've gotten yet that the legislature really is on board with bringing back a Human Rights Commission executive director. We haven't had one in a year, 2 years. I can't remember now.
A couple years.
It's been a while. And not having part-time, but having full-time, which means we have to just update the job description and do a few things on the HR side of things, which is where the human rights complaints are going right now anyway. But this would be a full-time director, and with a newly reconstituted Human Rights Commission, which is a board of commissioners. And I hope in the next few weeks to put out a press release asking for people to consider serving on that commission. That would be volunteer. I think they're just finalizing a few things, and we want to make sure that we know where we're going with the executive director so that the commissioners would know how they interact with an executive director. So in years past, commissions have had authority over executive directors and not authority over the executive director. So that's all being finalized. But it does look like the Human Rights Commission and an executive director full-time are in the near future for Sullivan County.
All right, we'll take a break and be back with more from Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. and the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hello, Thane Peterson here, host of the Living Jazz Show. Just want to give everyone a heads up that my guest this week will be Andy Milne, the great pianist and composer who will talk about the wonderful, highly personal new album he's just released. Living Jazz with Andy Milne, this Saturday from noon to 2 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We are talking to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, as we do every Friday. When we were talking earlier about some of the Drug Task Force efforts and some of the issues with fentanyl, the Drug Task Force is looking to create a Hope Not Handcuffs quick response team, specifically there in the Fallsburg Police Department. Let's remind folks what the Hope Not Handcuffs program is all about.
It's this great program that's done nationally that allows people just to walk into their local police department and to basically say they have an addiction issue. And instead of placing them in handcuffs, we're giving them hope. We have a team of volunteers and also our police officers who will work with that person to find them the help that they need and they want. It's a way for us to show, you know, we're not just all about the punitive response to addiction. Obviously, you know, there are laws about it all, but this is where you're just coming in saying, I got a problem, I need help. Well, we want to have people there to help you right away. And volunteers, in the past, we've had to call them in, and it could take a little while for them to get there. And that person may not be willing to wait that long. So that's why we're creating these quick response teams within these police departments. We already have it in Liberty, which has been very successful. Now we're creating one in Fallsburg. The county helps fund that, and it makes sure that we have the assistance and the resources that somebody needs as soon as they walk in the door. Because there is hope. You can get off of drug addiction, even though you may have been struggling with it for decades. And we want to be able to provide that hope right then, right there.
How are you measuring that success? You mentioned that the Liberty program has been successful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's actually been quite successful. In 2023, there were 48 visits and 4 connections to care by the quick response team in Liberty. But this year, Liberty has already completed 115 visits and 13 connections to care. So that's a huge increase over what we did in 2023. So word is getting out there. Fallsburg's quick response team, which is just starting out, has already completed 56 visits and made 3 connections. Last year, 24 people were connected to care through our Hope Line that we have. 34 have already been connected this year. So, this, I think, also is why we're seeing less overdose deaths this year, is that we are more aggressively, actively trying to meet people where they're at.
We've talked a couple of times when you've been here about some of the free training that the county offers. You've got another training program starting next month for home health aides.
Yes, this is exciting, actually, because there's a great need for home health aides. Any of us who have aging loved ones probably have thought about this, maybe even had to use home health aides, and they can be very hard to find. So we, through the Center for Workforce Development, are paying for that training at no cost to the people who want to take it. We only ask that they be 18 years old or older, a Sullivan County resident, have a high school diploma or a GED, a valid New York State driver's license, that they can pass a background check and drug test, because we're going to be sending these people into people's homes. Classes run from September 23rd to October 18th. They're going to be held at the hospital in Harris Monday through Friday in the evenings. And we want people to sign up who are ready, willing, and able to work and accept a position upon completion of the course, because we'll connect them with a position. So this is the best of all worlds. We're going to pay for your training and basically guarantee that if you do everything you're supposed to and pass that training, we'll have a job ready for you.
And then another course that you guys are
promoting the EMT classes in partnership with SUNY Sullivan this fall.
Yeah, there's already been a high level of interest in this, so I encourage people to sign up with SUNY Sullivan sooner rather than later. But we're offering the emergency medical technician, the EMT basic and refresher courses. Refresher, of course, for people who are already in it, but basic are for people who are looking to become EMTs, and we have a great need for them as well.
Need for both of those. Couple things to get to before we go. The deadline for that Youth Bureau funding, that's coming up.
Yep, August 22nd. So if you are part of a nonprofit, municipality, or school that is looking to get funding from the county through our Youth Bureau for a youth-oriented program you're doing in 2025, deadline's August 22nd. You need to get in touch with our Youth Bureau right away. We do have the application form right on the county website, so you can fill it out there. But don't delay. Now is the time. And we've got money that very likely you'd be eligible to use.
And public health, already looking to the fall. They've got their Health Fest set coming up.
Yeah, this is a wonderful program we recently started. It's going to be our Health Fest at Hanafee Park over in Liberty, not far from our social services campus and the care center. It's going to be on September 14th from 11 to 3. It's free for everyone to be a part of. Right now, what we're looking for are local vendors, people who have some sort of health focus that want to be part of it. All you need to do is give a call to our public health office, 292-5910. That's 845-292-5910, extension 2222. That's an easy one to remember. For vendors, and I will be mentioning this more for the general public, but right now, since we're about a month away from it, if you would like to have a table at it and you're a local nonprofit or even a business, I would get in touch with our public health folks right now.
Those spots will fill up fast.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. Thank you for joining us again this Friday. Have a safe Friday. It looks like it's going to be nice this weekend, though, so enjoy the weekend.
I think it's going to be wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity, as always, Tim.
Of course. And we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Neil Hitch about the Community Advisory Board, Radio Catskills Community Advisory Board, and a Horizon Happy Hour that you're invited to. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Radio Catskill's Community Advisory Board is inviting listeners to a Horizon Happy Hour. That's coming up Wednesday at 5 at the Market Sheds at Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. You can share your feedback about Radio Catskill and hear some great music. Here to tell us a little bit more is the president of our Community Advisory Board, Dr. Neil Hitch, who you might also know as the director of the museum at Bethel Woods. Hello, sir.
Hey, it's very good to be here.
Thank you for coming in. So in the capacity as president of the Community Advisory Board, you want to let folks know that this is a great opportunity to come out and share feedback.
Yeah, I mean, the Community Advisory Board exists to get feedback from the community about the work that WJFF does, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, so I think we've been looking for opportunities. I will say this. Since COVID, right, yeah. Since 2020, like an opportunity to kind of go out into the community and meet someone or talk or even host a small community meeting. We kind of, I feel like, got away from that a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. And this is a great opportunity to, you know, not only share feedback, but experience some really cool music.
So,
and when I want to talk about the musicians, but just so folks know, the Community Advisory Board is something that the station is required to have. Actually, all public media stations that are funded through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting are required to have this as a requirement for obtaining those funds. So you have to have a community advisory board, and they're supposed to report back the if the station is meeting the needs of the community. So the community advisory board hosts events like this, takes surveys and different types of ways of communicating that information back to the board. And then we use that information to better serve our listeners. So, yeah,
but I also think this has been effective, right? Because yeah. I know that, like, since I've been here, I came to the county in 2020, and I've been a public radio listener my since high school.
Yeah.
So I was going to say my whole life, but since high school. And what I will note about the radio station since I've been here is it's really leaned into being really local, public, regional programming. Like this show in particular, like I turn this on at my desk and watch because I don't know where you get this amount of information about what's going on locally.
And that was a result of a survey from the Community Advisory Board. I think, was it last year or last spring? I can't remember. All the days meld together now. But yes, people said they wanted more local news. We're like, all right, we need to get some more local news in here. So this show was born, actually, yes, last year. We're celebrating over a year here on Radio Chatskill. So thanks.
And it's a great show.
Well, thanks. Actually, thank you.
I throw that out
and
there.
And the Bethel Woods Museum and the Community Advisory Board is great, too. Mutual admiration this morning. Listen, so let's talk about some of the music that folks can experience at this Horizon Happy Hour Wednesday at 5.
Yeah, so I will tell you, not unlike this show and some of the feedback you got, I think Bethel Woods have gotten feedback about doing more kind of local, like partnering with local, but also offering something where people could come. It's not a big pavilion concert or like a big festival. So what Horizon Happy Hour became, we piloted last year and we're doing it this year, is we say happy hour because it goes from 5 to 8 or 5 to sunset. That's the goal, right? Right at the end of when the museum closes, we, you know, have these spaces that are kind of used typically just when there's a big concert. And so we've been doing regional bands or taking, you know, advantage of having some local bands come and play through. It's open, free to the public. You come, you can buy a beer, you can buy, you know, hot wings, and you can hear some great bands. This coming Wednesday, August 14th, which is the day before the 55th anniversary of Woodstock.
Right.
It's right in the middle of our anniversary programming. We have Juma Sultan and the Aboriginal Music Society coming, and Laszlo Lang will be opening. Juma Sultan was on stage with Hendrix at the original festival. He's a percussionist. And so this really is... the Wednesday, it's the center of the week of our anniversary activities, and it certainly is an anniversary activity. Both these people playing have deep, deep ties to the original festival. Laszlo Lang is the son of Michael Lang, who was the idea man behind, you know, coming in out to the garden to see a giant concert.
And then Laszlo Lang is actually the son of Woodstock co-creator Michael Lang.
Yes.
Just another interesting, like, you know, anniversary tidbit there, I guess.
Yeah. And so what we're doing is, I think we try. So this event with CAB coming is kind of an opportunity. A couple year ago or more, maybe 2 years ago, we were talking about doing some small groups in areas around the community, going somewhere and meeting with people and just getting feedback on. Like, one thing is just talking to someone and ask them what they like about the radio is helpful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
And so we were just looking for some opportunities, and I think this came up as a great opportunity because it's live music. It's a pretty good tie. It's very local, right? It's a very local scene as far as the people who come. It gives us an opportunity to meet the people who are on the board. It gets the board out into the community, you know, so we can talk to people. And it also allows us to talk about, you know, what the CAB, the Community Advisory Board, does and how people can become involved with what they
do. Right. I was just going to say, you're looking for members to join the Community Advisory Board as well.
Yes, we are. So I think we currently have some spots open on the board. And part of the process of that it really is meeting, you know, in the community, meeting with the current CAB members, like getting an idea of why you love public radio. But more than that, it's also, I think the CAB is a great reflection of what our community is.
Yeah.
And so to be in a space where we can kind of fellowship with one another, have a beer, or like listen to music. You know, it's not about sitting in a meeting, right? In a way, it's about community feedback, is about being in the community.
Absolutely.
And being in the community is also about developing community.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this opportunity. We'll do this one this coming Wednesday, August 14th. And then September 11th will be the last Horizon Happy Hour of this season. And we'll also invite the community to that one to come meet Cab, and Cab will be there, and you can see what we're doing.
I appreciate it. The community advisory board technically reports to the board of trustees. And in case someone's listening and is thinking, oh, maybe I want to join the community advisory board, but I'm not sure I have that time commitment. This is separate from the board of trustees. This is, you guys basically meet quarterly.
Yeah, we meet quarterly, and we meet at least four times a year, but I think we've been trying to meet every other month, which just kind of gets us into a spirit of meeting. A lot of those meetings are online, or, you know, are Zoom related. And then we try to meet a couple of times a year like this in person and out in the community
and
somewhere.
Then I would just say again, I appreciate you then, you know, saying being in the community, like that outreach and getting that feedback is so important, because, you know, we rely on our listeners, not only for support, but also to tell us what they like and what they don't like. So you guys are an instrumental tool for our mission. So I appreciate that, and appreciate this really fun event that you guys are planning. It's free.
Yes.
And again, let's remind folks of the details.
So the details are, it is Wednesday, August 14th. It begins at 5. It is a happy hour. It is at Market Shed 2, which operates as a bar. You can buy chicken wings and hamburgers. Bands go on at 6, probably 7. And then the goal is that as the band is ending, the sun is setting, you are seeing the sunset over the historic field of
That's awesome.
1969 Woodstock Music and Art Fair, and having this amazing time in, you know, this great Market Shed at Bethel Woods Center for the Arts.
And sharing your feedback, telling us how we're doing here at Radio Catskill, enjoying some great jams. And you had me at chicken wing, I have to tell you. Thank you, Dr. Neil Hitch, who is the president of our Community Advisory Board here at Radio Catskill, and also the director of the museum at Bethel Woods. Thanks for coming in. I know you're really busy getting ready for anniversary week, so we appreciate you taking the time, and we really appreciate your dedication to the Community Advisory Board.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, culture reporter Valerie Manzi with not one, but two culture reports. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, Angela Page here from Folk Plus. Every week when I prepare my show, I draw from favorites over the last 40 years and from a few dozen new arrivals. My aim is to curate a playlist of the best of the singer-songwriters currently available. Join me Sundays at 4 and see who your next favorite artist might be.
Jonna Mendez was the CIA's chief of disguise. And back in the day, she often had to improvise.
Someone sent in a can of Dr. Scholl's foot powder. And I said, this is for your hair. You're going to love this. And I turned him into an old man.
Ideas about going incognito, from spies to AI. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Round the Bend Theater is a mobile theater company with a mission to encourage Hudson Valley playwrights and their work in development. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Sydney Grosberg-Runga and Beth Ryan Troxell from the Round the Bend Theater about their August readings, two original scripts to be read in two different Hudson Valley venues.
Good morning, Sydney and Beth, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. This is wonderful to be interviewing you about yet another theater company in the Hudson Valley, Round the Bend Theater, and it's a mobile theater company. What is a mobile theater company?
Well, we were born during COVID when everything was shut down, and the whole idea was that we weren't shut down as theater artists. So the glory of opening up communication was really our ticket to understanding how we could begin our mobile theater company. So we solicited playwrights in the Hudson Valley, and we received probably more than we anticipated. And we began by curating, reading through all the scripts, figuring out how many we could handle in a season. And we would cast professional actors to do the readings in development of the Hudson Valley playwrights. And so the mobility is that we are offered spaces in theaters or community centers or libraries, in spaces where people welcome theater for the community on many different levels. So our readings are they're the conduit for a playwright to understand where are they with their script as they progress to publishing, producing, and moving their work forward.
And how long have you been doing this?
We're in our fourth year, and we're very grateful. We have received support from ArtsMid Hudson and from Fair Game, and that has helped us in this whole opportunity to have professional actors present the readings from the chosen playwrights.
And I see you have one coming up. Tell us about that one.
Oh, I'd love to. I'll pass it on to Sydney. She is directing this really fun, really perfectly positioned play for August in the Catskills. So let me pass it on to Sydney right now. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey. So The Weekend People, it's by Tom Rowan, who's a New York City writer. However, he spent time in the Catskills and has written a beautiful play about an old family, long-term family home, and the family is revisiting the house right after or recently following the father's patriarch's death, and working out lots of inter-family things and their own personal things. A fun element to the play is that this family, there's a theater nearby, and this family has frequently hosted actors who are performing at the theater. And so there are a couple of actors thrown into the mix and some surprise actors coming in. So it's a lot, it's really a lot of fun. And yet there's a lot of life-changing moments in the play. Also, we're really excited to be at Unison Arts for the first time with this play. Unison Arts has a new space that they opened in June, and it's on Paradis Lane, which is right off the thruway. Fabulous. And it's an old house that they were gifted as a new home. And so if the hurricane passes us by quickly enough, our plan is to do the reading Sunday afternoon on a porch, which is where the play is set. Will be lovely if that works, if the weather cooperates, which it doesn't always.
And alternatively?
Alternatively, they have an indoor space that we'll just move the reading into.
And then it's repeated again on Monday, August 12th?
Yes.
And that's
And that's at 7 p.m. in Woodstock in the Mescal Hornbeck Center. We are hosted there by Performing Arts of Woodstock.
After that, you have another one coming up.
Yes, we do. And I'm going to pass it back to Beth because Beth is directing Still Small Voice. So here you go.
Hi. So after we follow The Weekend People, we have Jennifer O'Grady's play Still Small Voice. And that will be on August 24th at 2 p.m. at the Sarbides Library. And then Sunday, August 25th at 2 p.m. at the Kleiner James Art Center, which is the gallery for the Birdcliff Guild.
In Woodstock.
Yes.
And what is that about?
That is such a fun little story. It's a little delicious. It's seemingly a elder woman is home waiting, anticipating a young gal that's coming to live with her who's related to a dear friend of hers. I guess that's really all I should say at this point.
Absolutely.
But it's very fun. It's a tricky one for the actors. They're very excited because it's a really line for line, surprise. And, you know, that is something that an actor really relishes. How can we not play the end, obviously? Where are we in this moment? And what's the subplot here? So between the two actors, we have another actor who plays the landlord at the door and will be the narrator for stage directions. Here's the thing. We are truly in the world of radio theater. Radio theater always was about how we create the story without the visual aspect there. And we don't have all of the bells and whistles of radio theater. We don't have the Foley players, et cetera, for this reading. So the actors really have to be there. They, in their live reading, they have to be in that setting and create as much of a visual landscape for the audience to hook onto. And this is going to be a fun one. This is an unexpected little trip, I would say.
Well, they both sound wonderful. And where can folks get more information about the events as well as upcoming events to keep track of what Round the Bend is doing?
It's so nice of you to ask. We have a beautiful website, and it is literally called Round the Bend Theater. And it's a fully fleshed out website that has all the upcoming work, past work, the actors' bios, and along with upcoming events, photos of the playwrights. Because we are a playwrights theater, we always post the photographs of the playwright.
That is a nice tribute to the writer.
Well, I appreciate you noticing that, because it's really, this is where we are. This is where our mission is, that we serve the playwright. But we couldn't serve the playwright with all these fabulous actors who are, you know, so ready to jump in and do a Zoom rehearsal with us and do a live reading of the play in development. So it's a really large community that we have.
Well, thank you so much for, first of all, for developing Round the Bend Theater for the community and for taking the time to share this information with us.
Thank you so much for asking. Please say, I know that Sydney would like to say goodbye as well, but we really appreciate you reaching out to us. And we hope that your listeners will look at roundthebendtheater.org. And if they have any questions for us, they can always write us at info@roundthebendtheater.org as well. Here's Sydney. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. This was great. So glad you reached out.
And that's culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to Sydney Grosberg Ronga, and Beth Ryan Troxell from Round the Bend Theater. Valerie also spoke to Debbie Lan about the Song Club. It's a drop-in singing event she started in 2018. Song Club events are held monthly in Rosendale and Ellenville. Debbie is a composer, lyricist, arranger, and teaching artist with two award-winning CDs of original music for the family with her band, Grenadian.
Good morning, Debbie, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I was so interested to hear about your song club. I just thought, what a wonderful idea, people singing together. Can you tell us about the song club and where and when it's happening and give us a little background?
Sure. So Song Club is a drop-in singing event, meaning it's sort of a one-off. People can come to, you know, an event, and it's not an ongoing weekly ensemble. So I run two song clubs a month. At the moment, the second Sunday of the month is at the Muse in Rosendale, and the last Saturday of the month I'm at the Music Institute of Sullivan and Ulster Counties in Ellenville. So a song club, it's about an hour and a half. And basically, I bring in a popular, familiar song that most people know. I write a new vocal arrangement for it, so I put in different harmonies. I hand out lyric sheets to everybody. You don't have to read music, and there's no experience in anything necessary. And then I teach the harmonies. And in an hour and a half, we learn 2 and 3 part harmonies to a song, and we're having a lot of fun. There's a lot of laughter. You know, it's a kind of a community building event, because you enter a room full of strangers, and then suddenly by an hour and a half later, you feel like you have friends sitting right next to you, because it's very interactive. Obviously we're all singing together, and it's such a good, especially for people who feel isolated. It really brings us all out of ourselves, and it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun, and it's not like anybody has to be, you know, a professional singer or anything. It's for anybody, any level of experience.
So you have an event coming up this Sunday, I believe, in Rosendale.
Correct.
And that is where?
It's at the Muse in Rosendale. It's 1 Madeline Lane in Rosendale. It's an hour and a half. It's from 5 to 6:30.
Okay.
And this week we're going to sing a song called Dirty Work by Steely Dan. No, it's fun for me because I get to choose whichever songs I like. And I think this song club coming up is the 53rd song club. I've been doing this since 2018, but of course then we were shut down over COVID.
And when will you be in Ellenville?
I will be in Ellenville the last Saturday of the month. Actually, not in August because I'm away for that month. But starting back in September, the last Saturday of every month, I'm in Ellenville.
So if folks are interested in joining either in Rosendale or in Ellenville,
yeah,
where can they get the information?
So they can go to the website for the Muse. They can go to the website for the Music Institute of Sullivan and Ulster Counties. And also, if they're on Facebook, I have a Song Club with Debbie Land Facebook page. I post all the information there. And then also we send information out regularly to like the Blue Thumb Press and the Shawangunk. But we do send out press release all the time.
And we get it here at WJFF. That's why we contacted you. Well, thank you so much. And I wish you a bunch of happiness singing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And thanks again to culture reporter Valerie Manzi for her report there with Debbie Land of Song Club. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
The mixtape's all about eclectic music, compiled with love, like an old-school mixtape. I'm Jason Tuga, and every Friday night, it's my aim to bring you something special, a unique mix of music you wouldn't hear anywhere else. You can count on hearing a diverse range of artists, eras, genres, and vibes. The Mixtape, an hour of music assembled by me just for you, Friday night.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle, you can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. I'm keeping an eye on the weather. The National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch for our area. It includes the cities of Hawley, Honesdale, Milford, Monticello, Scranton, and Wilkes-Barre. That's until 2 o'clock. Radar is showing the majority of the strong storms to the north and west of us. In fact, the National Weather Service in the last 15 minutes issued a tornado warning for central Susquehanna County in Pennsylvania until 11:15. That's around the towns of Montrose and Brooklyn, Pennsylvania. That tornado warning goes till 11:15. Again, our area for Central New York, Sullivan especially, and then Pike and Wayne are under a tornado watch until 2, and a flash flood watch until 2 a.m. This system is the remnants of Tropical Storm Debbie impacting our area. Flash flooding is the main concern of this system, with almost all of the heavy rainfall occurring today, later this afternoon, and into the evening. Creeks and streams, poor drainage in urban areas are the most risk at flooding during high rainfall rates. Main stem river flooding potential is somewhat less, but still exists. On Point is next.